Hey, everybody. This is part two of my summer shorts, I guess we could call it. Today, we are interviewing Kyle Hester. This was actually out last year, and I put the previous show, which was Pat Philbin, and I put this one with Kyle Hester in a summer of 2016 folder that was supposed to go out while I was on vacation. But I don't know. I have so many things going on that I completely forgot about that folder, and I put other shows out and I completely forgot about these episodes. And then when I was going through them to put them out this summer while I was on vacation, I saw the 2016 folder open it up and boom, two interviews that were golden and I forgot to put them out there. So my apologies to Kyle Hester and my apologies to Pat Philbin. So today I interviewed, well, not today, it was actually last year, but today's interview is with Kyle Hester. He's an actor, and he is what kind of pulled me towards him was that he's in a movie called Zombie with a Shotgun. And the cool thing about that is the movie was completely crowdfunded, and it started as a web series on YouTube. And I think it's kind of cool that people nowadays, we have the technology to put out, you know, film quality movies. Is that what you would call it? Hollywood quality, whatever. High quality movies, and fund it through, you know, fans and I don't know, make cool art, I guess, that way. So check out this interview with Kyle Hester and check out Zombie with a Shotgun. And he's also doing a movie called Preacher 6. So I guess Google Preacher 6 and you can find info on that. And during the interview, he gives you information to find info on that. Okay, so check it out, and that's all, guys. Thanks.
You're listening to the Wait What If podcast.
So, what are we going to talk about tonight? Are you familiar at all with, I want to call it Axanar Productions? I had found this guy just researching people, and he had crowdfunded a movie. He was a Star Trek fan, a huge Star Trek fan. When I say huge, I mean there's like an underground of actors and, you know, crew that set up sets, that write scripts and film full episodes of different variants of Star Trek. I didn't know if you're aware of that.
I was not aware of that, but that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable. And I asked him, I said, why do you guys do this? And he said, it's how they go to film school. And it's, you know, they're obviously mega fans of Star Trek. That's like a whole you know, different world as far as that goes. So this guy was doing that, and he built a whole set in his house, and he had people, you know, actors would come in and they would work for a summer or you know, and they would, you know, they had their other jobs too, but then they would come in at night and do all this this filming. And a lot of this was done back in, you know, the 90s and then early 2000s. So what they were doing is filming the stuff, getting it digital, and then you had to kind of like hunt it down. It wasn't like today where you can just go on YouTube or anything like that and find it. He funded a full-fledged film, like a feature film called Axanar. And I don't exactly know what Axanar is. It has something to do with Star Trek and something to do with, you know, the storyline. But regardless, he raised, I want to say, like $1 million or more to film this thing. And
wow.
Yeah. And he brought some legitimate actors. He had Tony Dodd on the, Tony Dodd, you might remember him from Candyman. He played Candyman.
Yeah.
So he had him on board. He had and then a few other folks. So obviously this got a lot of attention and also the attention of, I can't remember now who owns Star Trek. I think it's, CBS. And maybe Universal, or I don't know who owns it, but whoever owned it said, no, you got to stop this. Now there's this big case going on about just how far people can go with these crowdfunded films, especially with fan films. And so once I read about that.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to ask you that. Actually, it's like, really, that didn't sound like it would be something that could be done because of the intellectual property and, like, you know, the ownership of Star Trek.
That's
because,
right,
it's like it's a huge thing. So now he's being sued.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There's a big...
Man, that sucks. See, if he'd have called me, I'd have said, yeah, you probably shouldn't do that.
Yeah. I imagine a lot of people would have said that. You know, this probably isn't. But I think they had done it for so long that they thought that, you know, we could probably get away with this. But, you know.
Well, here's the difference. Mm-hmm. The difference is when you are doing something like that's fun, you know, on YouTube and whatnot, that's one thing. But then when it comes into something that could be a potential moneymaker.
Yeah.
You know, which is they said, oh, this is a movie. This can make money. That's our project. I mean, that's our product.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's like just crossing the lines. I mean, you can have fun, you know, as much as you want in your backyard and whatnot and YouTube, you know, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, once it gets into the big leagues, there's other things to deal with.
That's exactly what, and then they started doing like selling merchandise, you know, props from the set and whatever, just to raise more and more money. And then, yeah, it's just, I mean, it's kind of an obvious thing, but I mean, it's obviously not cut and dry though, because he's like, no, we're going to go to the full extent. And they're actually going to trial, pretty soon. So, he told me the whole story. And then of course that got me into, you know, crowdfunding. Wow. This is an amazing thing, right? Cause think about, you know, someone who wants to get into film 20 years ago, 30 years ago, you basically, and I don't even actually, I'm talking through my ass right now, because I don't know how someone would go about that route. I mean, maybe go to film school, maybe, you know, work as an intern on different projects, move out to California. But now it seems with this growing technology and the ability to come up with special effects for pennies on the dollar in your own house, that is, it's just exploded this pool of talent and this, well, I mean, relative, I guess. I mean, if anyone can make a movie, then I guess, you know, you're going to see the lack of talent too. But it exploded this area.
Well, absolutely. I think that it's like saying anyone can pick up a paintbrush,
mm-hmm.
which is true. Anyone can paint a painting,
that's true.
But not everyone is a brilliant artist. So I think that that's where, you know, it's like you got to have your chops no matter what. So
right.
if you, you know, you can buy a camera and that's awesome and, you know, go for it and whatnot. But, you know, and to get the subtleties and nuance of how to make a good film, you know, it's a lot to it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So I think that the key, you know, once you get all the stuff, and can, you know, get all the equipment and whatnot, your job then becomes to not suck.
I had researched some of the different crowdfunded movies out there, and I saw Zombie with the Shotgun. Now, this is a project that Ariel Ruiz Hilton, correct? Or no, it's Hilton Ariel Ruiz. Yeah,
exactly, yeah. Exactly, yeah, Hilton.
Let's have you tell me the story of Zombie with the Shotgun.
Yeah, well, Hilton, it's Hilton's show. Basically, he had already done the web series, and he did like five episodes, I believe.
Okay.
And so he had already built a following based on that.
Now, did he write these?
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Okay. And was it a graphic?
He's actually turning it into a comic book.
Okay.
As well. So that's actually all of that stuff's being drawn up now. But, yeah, he's, and so right now, you know, we have shot a lot of the feature film that mm-hmm. after having, you know, Indiegogo crowdfunding and some private investors and, you know, pulling all the horses around and getting it going.
Yeah.
So, but, yeah, I had spoken to him about Zombie with a Shotgun just from, we met on Twitter. Same
okay.
Same way that you found me.
Yeah, yeah, and, it's pretty cool to meet people that way.
Yeah, so it's like it's a social media thing, and we just started talking, and then we're like, you know, one thing led to another, and hey, let's make your movie. So then now it's mostly shot. So moving on swimmingly.
Yeah, cool. So the process of making a movie like that, I mean, I imagine, especially if you're a director, if you're a filmmaker, even an actor, and you have the desire to put your project on film or put your project out there, it's got to be daunting. It's got to be one of those things where you say, where do I even begin with this? Where does someone even begin? I mean, obviously you went through the crowdfunding, but I mean, you got to start with story.
Okay, here's the thing. Okay. Like Hilton went to film school. He's been doing, you know, this forever. Mm-hmm. And I've been acting since I was in the seventh grade.
Okay.
So, there's a lot of experience that comes before, you know, hey, let's raise some money and make a movie. So if I was going to recommend anything to anyone, it'd be get on sets any way that you can, you know, to learn how a film is made, you know, and yeah. like get your foot a little bit before you try to jump in and make a film, you know, especially with other people's money. So, yeah. You know what I mean? Because it's like, you really get one shot at that, you mm-hmm. know, it's like, oh yeah, yeah. They, you know, crowdfunded something and it totally sucked. And then where do you go with that?
That's right. Then it becomes part of your resume like, and yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's, you got to definitely, you know, one foot in front of the other and hopefully you don't trip yourself along the way.
So I'm looking at it as an outsider, I guess, in the same way that if you were to say, okay, let's build a house without any experience, obviously, where do you start? But if you were a carpenter's apprentice for your entire life and then, you know, maybe went to carpentry school or became a master carpenter, you look at building a house and say, oh, naturally, this is where you start, you know, and this is how we do it. And you see the process in your head. Is that accurate?
Yeah.
Okay.
That is an excellent way to describe that.
Okay.
I think it's like building from the ground up, you know, because it's like, it is a lot of people that are highly skilled at what they do to make something that ends up looking good as the finished product.
Sure.
You know, because it's like, if you don't have a good gaffer, and what a gaffer is the person that, that creates the lighting design for the film,
mm-hmm.
You don't have a good gaffer, then it's going to look like crap.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a sound guy, it's like, that's the best giveaway that this is a low budget, no budget production.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Where, you know, kind of sounds like you're in a big room, you know, and is the sound quality just kind of stays from there.
Yeah. It's and echoey.
So
and
like, yeah. So all those people, you know, that are, and you have, but the thing is, you have to get the people that are good at each of those things.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to pull something off. So that's why I would be hesitant to say, hey, yeah, man, you know, just, you want to do something, go ahead, raise money and yeah, well, I'm gonna do it, you know, but I think that maybe raise, you know, money by, I don't know, lemonade stand or something like that will be,
yeah.
Start before you start an Indiegogo, and then you're, you know, that kind of thing. Because then, you know, like you said before, it's like your reputation is on the line.
Yeah. And everyone seems to, creative people, when you start talking to them at a party who are drinking, they always seem to think they have a great movie idea. And you're like, yeah, yeah.
You know what? They might. There's a lot of great movie ideas, you know, but there's a long way from yeah. a great idea to making a movie.
Are there any ideas left, though? Think about that. With all the movies and books that were written, you know, there was a, I read an article just recently about how there's really only a half a dozen or so stories. And it can be put into a visual graph. And every story that's ever been told is a combination of these. And it's a pretty remarkable, because when you start, when you look at, you know, your favorite films or books or something, you look at the graph and you say, oh my gosh, it follows that entire, and it has something to do with, like, you know, your introduction of your protagonist and your, you know, whatever happens that sets the protagonist in motion to get to whatever his desire is going to be, or whatever is the end game, and then setbacks. And it was pretty neat, because it was like, no matter what it was, whether this was a story about ducks trying to fight off a geese in a Disney movie, or if this was a zombie with the shotgun, if you look into it, it's all very similar story technique. And I always thought that was fascinating. At least I, when I learned about that, I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah. Well, I think that there's so many emotions that we have, you know, so there, it's, everything is based off of those. It's like, and as far as like story structure,
mm-hmm.
it's always about, you know, the overcoming obstacles, you know? So yeah. It's like, whatever those are. And it's kind of like, this is life. life is about continually overcoming obstacles. So what part of your movie is going to be about that? So, which is like, you know, it's an extreme simplification of that. So, I mean, I just made all movies about one thing, you know, overcoming obstacles. And that's, you know, you can break it down to that. But I think that where the differences are, you know, is really in the nuances, you know, and in those, you know, the fringe elements, you know, of whatever it is, you know, that you're trying to do. So, I don't know if you want to get deep, I think there's only so many ways that you can describe things anyway, you know, given the language that we have, we only have so many words that we can use. So it's like, you know, so we put those words together and the greatest combination that we know how. And I think it comes down to that.
Doesn't it drive you nuts? You know, I've done some writing, I've done some comedy writing and stuff. And, you know, you work and you're trying to put words together. And then you just read, you know, Orwell, or you read Hemingway, and you're like, how the hell did they do this? You know, like where in the recesses of their brain did they learn to? There's great Orwell dialogue, or I'm sorry, no, it was Hemingway dialogue in, it was a Woody Allen one that came out a couple years ago. Midnight in Paris. And when you watch that and you hear just the dialogue, which is from a lot of his novels, you're like, you gotta be kidding me. It's just amazing. Now,
oh yeah, and David Mamet.
Oh yeah. You know? Yeah, yeah.
David Mamet's like brilliant dialogue.
That's so all he does, right?
Yeah. It's like that quick choppy language, and it's like you're watching poetry in motion, you know.
Did he do was Mamet Glengarry Glenn Ross?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. And doesn't he coach the actors into having like a certain rhythm using like a metronome or something like that? Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And then when you watch it totally works.
It does. It really does. So it's kind of like you know, Shakespeare is done with the iambic pentameter.
Yep.
And what that there's five syllables that go is like it has a beat and a flow to it. So yeah, it's like when you can do that and tell a story, you got some chops.
Yeah. Yeah. There's talent's just an amazing thing to see, because it really sets you apart from, you know, the crap that's out there. And and like, you know, kind of what we talked about at the beginning, that the floodgates have opened for the ability to get your your creations out there for the world to see. And that has good connotations and it has bad connotations, especially with, like you said, how long you've been in acting your whole life, right?
Yeah.
So you worked your ass off your whole life to get where you are. And then you have, I don't know, someone that's on YouTube that gets discovered and all of a sudden blows up to be huge. I mean, to me, that would drive me bonkers, but I guess that's just the way life is.
Well, you know what, here's the thing. We're all on our own journey here, you know? So it's like, I know that it's easy to, you know, to be upset about something like that, you know, but the thing is, I'm not that guy.
Yeah. You
know, I'm not a YouTube like person. It's like, I'm not, you know, that kind of comic or whatever that's garnering the attention. And so it's like, that's its own special kind of quality in itself. So I'm not going to get those jobs that person blew up and got. So good on them for whatever they do.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of like you do what makes you special.
How do you measure success when you're out in Hollywood? And I ask that for a couple reasons, because there's a, you know, I'm kind of thinking about how my wife and I watch TV and watch movies. And, you know, you can be watching something and someone will come on maybe just for one role or something, or maybe just one episode, and you'll see him and you'll say, you know what, that guy looks like he's maybe 60 years old. I've never seen him in a show before. He acted very well. You know, he could have been doing this his whole life. How come that guy, you know, never made the breakout role and became famous versus, you know, the character actor or, you know, someone that just ends up making commercials? Like, how do you, I guess the question is, in the sea of talent, how do you break yourself out? And sub question would be, do you just have to define your own sense of success when it comes to acting?
Well, I think there's a level of consistency that that people are looking for, you know, that directors are looking for.
Right.
And if you can, and also a big part of it is not quitting. Yeah. You know, it's like, it's, I've known so many people that have come to LA and, you know, basically like 2 years is kind of the sticking point of whether you are here or like go back, you know, to where you came from. Mm-hmm. Cause it's so difficult. But it's just a matter of like sticking to it and not quitting and showing up, and you got to be good. I mean, you have to have the chops in order to have any kind of like sustained career and not blow it. And, you know, don't be a jerk. And, you know, I think that's why you'll see, you know, the same actors that, like, you know, you look at the IMDb and it's like, oh my God, they've been doing this forever.
Yeah.
You know? And it's because there's a level of trust there that is like, oh yeah, well, okay. If you've done all that, I know that you're a professional,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that you'll show up and do your job and do represent whatever the show is, whatever the character is. Well, and I think that's, you know, that's the most important thing. So it comes down to not sucking.
Yeah. that's true with everything, you know. It's just
yeah.
And you're right. You got to put you just got to be consistent too. I mean, you got to put the legwork in. Some folks don't. I had a friend of mine, Mike Razaday from college. He moved out to California. Him and about a half a dozen of my friends from college moved out to California. And I didn't know what his major was in school. I just was friends with him, and we never really talked about that. So he went out there and he tried out for maybe Young and the Restless, one of those. And he landed it. Gosh, this is almost 20 years ago now. And a couple of years later, he's winning daytime Emmys, and he ended up making a pretty good career out of it. First shot right out of the barrel. Yeah, isn't that an amazing thing? And yeah, I don't know. It's kind of...
That's the thing, man. It's like everyone's on their own journey, you know. It's like, you know, those things happen. Yeah. So the overnight, you know, you land that role when you get off the bus.
Yeah.
You know, those things kind of happen.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. Good on him. Yeah, you know, I think it comes along with what's going on with technology and cell phones and, you know, the attention spans, and it's like now everything, you know, it's gone down to GIFs. You have like, you know, 3 seconds, not even 3 seconds, you know, it's like, ah, look at all these GIFs, you know, that's very entertaining. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I mean, it's like that. So that's just kind of like a microcosm of the attention span that's going on. So it's like, so as a filmmaker, you know, it's like, you gotta suck people in, you know, away from their phones, you know, to be able to make something, you know, successful now. And I'm not sure that's a good thing. But, you know, hopefully that'll change.
Or suck them into their phones. I bet you that was something, I mean, obviously it was something that a lot of people didn't see coming forward was, you know, like take Blockbuster, for example. They didn't say, hey, do you know what? We should start thinking about digital media instead of CDs and tapes. And obviously we know they went to the wayside as a result of that. But, you know, movies today, they have to, I guess, expect and perhaps draw people into the little screen. Cause even myself as a father at two, I don't get out to see some of these big movies that I'd like to see. What happens is it's 10 mm-hmm. o'clock at night. I'm lying in bed and I'm, you know, on Netflix or something and watching it on my phone. So it's definitely a different world, but it also opens up, your ability to see these things because, you know, even 20 years ago, less than that, heck, before the iPhone came out, you were stuck. You had to watch either on your laptop if you were going to be portable, you know, or you had to watch it on a DVD. So it's really, I guess you would call it a mixed blessing. Does crowdfunding, do you think that some of the bigger studios will start, I don't know, I guess, looking at what's being crowdfunded and what's popular and use that almost as a litmus test, you know, meaning like a big gamble, obviously, in Hollywood is saying, you know, what are people going to watch? What are they going to like? And you can almost go on.
I mean, people, you know what? I mean, absolutely. I would think that there are people that are hired, you know, by the studios to watch everything on YouTube, you know, see what's popular, what's trending, you know, all that kind of stuff. so that they can take advantage of whatever that is. So I would say absolutely. And that's also why, as filmmakers, don't give your story away.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm about to launch a crowdfunding actually for a film called Preacher Six that I'm going to be playing the title role in.
Okay.
And the story that I'm putting out there is that it's a small town preacher that comes to the big city and ends up fighting demons in a literal sense.
Okay.
But I can't tell the storyline. I cannot give the plot away, because if I do that, somebody's going to rip it off,
yeah.
You know, and that happens all the time, you know? So you go in and, you know, I mean, it's happened to a lot of friends of mine, you know, that go in and pitch, you know, their script idea to, you know, the studios or, you know, lower budget kind of like, you know, indie studios. And 5 years later, they'll see their movie.
Oh, that's rough.
A little bit changed, because it's easy to go, oh yeah, we have something like that.
Yeah.
You know, oh yeah, yeah, we were just talking about a film like that. And there's no way for me to go, no, you weren't. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I don't know what you were talking about, but it's like, once you put the information out there, it's out there.
What's the deal?
So,
what's the deal with similar movies coming out together? You know, like, I don't know, a couple years ago, there was one about the White House getting attacked, and two of them came out at the same time. And that seems to happen a lot. You're like, what's the deal with that?
You know what? That's a good question. I think that there's kind of two ways to look at it. There's either like the physical way of like one studio got a whiff of what the other person was doing, so it's like, oh yeah, that's a good idea. We got to do something like that, you know. And then you'll have similar things that come out, maybe not exactly the same, but yeah. Similar. You know, or like, you know, Batman's coming out, you know, so the other studio's like, all right, we got to have another superhero to compete with Batman.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, so they're always kind of competing with each other and end up putting out similar storylines, you know, because you don't want to miss the boat, you know, whatever that, the wave of, you know, popularity is at that time.
Yeah. And which brings us, I guess, back to our original point, the ability to now tell those stories. What I like to do too is I like to go on, I like media, you know, whether it's podcasts, whether it's independent music or any sort of film. You know, I go on a YouTube and I look, and I think it's great that people, you know, a kid in Poughkeepsie, New York, who would have no opportunity whatsoever to explore his desire to make films, you know, whether it be he just doesn't have the money or whatever, can now tell stories, can now take a low budget, a camera. You're right, it's not going to win Oscar or anything like that, but there's some really good stories out there, and there's some talented people. Yeah, I've gone through my questions here. What moves Kyle Hester? What's your big philosophy on life?
It's nothing is going to happen if you quit. There's two things. For as far as acting, my goal is to tell good stories,
mm-hmm.
and to make to be believable and entertain.
Right.
You know, it's on a very, very base level, and I think that. The bigger part falls to your last question with, you know, who am I and what do I want to do? You know, so I think, you know, basically the way I look at it is the more people that I can get in front of and, you know, spread some positivity in the world, that's what really moves me. So it's like, if there's any reason why I would want my acting to, you know, to take me to where like more people give a crap about Kyle Hester as an actor, it would be because of those messages and, you know, and foundations and stuff like that, that I would like to, you know, start, when I'm able to do that.
Sure. All right, Kyle. I don't want to take any more of your time. Thanks a ton for coming on here. I obviously, follow you on Twitter, so I'll keep an eye out for, Preacher Six. Is it available now for us to check out on Indiegogo?
So I'll be building it over the next couple of weeks. And, yeah, I think that people can only look at it once it's live.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, So you'll be hearing, you know, I mean, and the perks are going to be, you know, a lot very similar to the zombie with shotgun perks.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that people appreciated all of the different ways to do that.
Maybe I'll get my second producer accolade with your film there.
Right on, man. You know what? That is killer. Yeah, it's like, I think, oh, you know what? Do me a favor. And go on and put your email address into that little CAPTCHA thing that I have up there. So the pinned tweet where I said, put your email address here.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, you know, I'll, like, when I send out, you know, the announcements and whatnot, you'll be in the loop as well, because it's easy for people to miss things on Twitter.
Yeah.
Just because of it.
Okay. Where is that? Is that on?
It's the pinned tweet of Preacher Six.
Okay. Okay. I'll check that out.
Yeah. The very top.
So excellent. And people can follow you at,
Follow me at, you know, at the Preacher Six site.
Very cool, Kyle. Thanks. Thanks for your time. And, as far as the show, I have a bunch in the bank right now. So, I'll let you know. I'll keep you in the loop when.
Awesome. Awesome. Much appreciated.
Hey, no problem. And, I don't know. Is it cheesy to say to, actors break a leg?
No, it's not.
All right,
actually,
man.
That's cool.
All right, man. Break a leg then.
Thank you, brother. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take care.
Like us on facebook.com/WWIPodcast and at WWIPodcast on Twitter. Drop us a line at waitswhatifpodcast@yahoo.com. Listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn Internet Radio. Enjoyed your listening experience. Now go forth and expand your reality.